message to Israel. Shalom Aleichem. Peace be unto you. Shema Yisrael Adonai Eloheinu, Adonai Echad. Hear, O Israel, our God, the Lord, is one. This is the voice of the message to Israel.
Shalom Aleichem. Peace be unto you, my dear friends. In these very unstable times, when fear is running rampant around the world, there is urgent need for a message of peace. People are crying out in frustration, longing for a lessening of the troubles that are gripping the world. The word of Jewish greeting, Shalom, refers not merely to a cessation of hostilities, but to an inner quietness of soul that enables a person to be at peace within himself, even in the midst of hostilities. It is to be at rest in the midst of unsettling situations that are beyond personal control. Daniel chapter 4 has a message for the Gentile nations of today, as well as for the beleaguered Jews of Israel and the dispersion around the world. This message is recorded for us in Daniel chapter 4 and verse 17. That the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomsoever he will, and sets up over it the basest of men. This divine revelation was given through the great Gentile king Nebuchadnezzar, king of the mighty Babylonian Empire. Daniel chapter 4 records the king's personal testimony of how Yahweh, the Most High God, dealt with him because of his pride. The great wise king of Israel, Solomon, wrote of seven things that are an abomination to the Lord, and placed at the top of the list is a proud look. The pride in Nebuchadnezzar's heart was literally disgusting and nauseating in the sight of God. He could not in any way allow such a challenge to his glory go unmet. So the mighty king's humiliation took place. The humbling of King Nebuchadnezzar quite probably took place toward the end of his reign. His elaborate and extensive building program was complete, and he was sitting back, glorying in what he had accomplished. Is not this great Babylon that I have built for the house of the kingdom, by the might of my power and for the honor of my majesty? On two previous occasions, Yahweh had broken through the paganism that gripped Nebuchadnezzar's heart, and had spoken to him, revealing something of his uniqueness as the God of heaven. In chapter 2 of the book of Daniel, Yahweh revealed to the king his great plan for future Gentile kingdoms. In chapter 3, he witnessed firsthand Yahweh's miraculous deliverance from the fiery furnace of his servants, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. In each of these instances, Yahweh had spoken clearly and forcibly of the fact that there was no other God like the Most High, who rules supreme over heaven and earth and all that is in them. Now, once again, the Most High, in mercy, chooses to reach out to this autocratic despot in a personal way and with a very personal message. In a dream during the night, Nebuchadnezzar was shown a tree that grew to such proportions that its height reached the heavens and in extent covered the then known world. It was a tree of great beauty, and its fruit was abundant and tasty. It gave protection to the beasts of the field and lodging for the birds of the air. While admiring the beauty of the scene before him, Nebuchadnezzar became aware of a command for the tree to be cut down, and for the stump to be bound with iron and bronze. the heart of a beast was also to be given to it. The purpose for this action, according to verse 17, was to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men and gives it to whomsoever he will, and sets up over it the basest of men. The New Covenant writer, Paul, the rabbi of Tarsus, wrote something similar in his letter to the Christian church at Rome. Let every soul be subject unto the higher powers, for there is no power but of God. The powers that be are ordained of God. True, evil men have gained leadership through deceit and violence, but in the final analysis, no person ever rises to a place of authority without God's permission, and it being in accordance with His sovereign will. Though God allows men a great deal of freedom, He continues to maintain absolute control. Neither Daniel nor the Apostle Paul implied that believers must never, under any circumstance, disobey properly constituted state authority. A believer's first allegiance is to God, and if the state requires actions that violate this loyalty, then resistance is in order. We see an example of this in Daniel chapter 3, where the three Hebrew young men refused to worship an idol as commanded by the king. Again in Daniel 6, we see how Daniel continued to pray despite a royal edict banning such action. The prophet Daniel declared that the tree in the dream represented the king. Just as the tree had grown to a great size, strength, and beauty, so Nebuchadnezzar's influence, power, and majesty had spread throughout that part of the world. With the completion of his construction projects, the king had every human reason to feel good about what he had accomplished. Records indicate that he was quite probably the greatest builder of ancient time, and so his boast, "Is not this great Babylon that I have built?" The king was evidently on an ego trip. What needs to be kept in mind as we look at this chapter of Holy Scripture is that while God was dealing personally with an ancient potentate who had ruled over a vast and mighty empire, the message is applicable to all people. In verse 17 we read, "This matter is by the decree of the watchers, and the demand by the word of the holy ones, to the intent that the living may know that the Most High rules in the kingdom of men, and gives it to whomsoever he will, and sets up over it the basest of men." Note the words, "to the intent that the living may know." This indicates that here is a truth Yahweh desires all men to know, irrespective of race, language, or color of skin. Nebuchadnezzar was unwilling to give Yahweh this recognition. In his pagan mind, Bel-Merodach was supreme. In his thinking, it was Merodach that had enabled his armies to be victorious. It was Merodach that had granted him the resources of strength and wisdom to build the city of Babylon into a beautiful, magnificent, and impregnable city. Almost every building had some inscription of praise both to himself and to his God. There was no way that God could let this challenge to his sovereignty pass without something be done. 12 months after Daniel's warning of impending judgment due to pride, Nebuchadnezzar walked in the cool setting of the beautiful hanging gardens he had built for his queen. This setting would allow him the height to look over the city. In that moment, with his heart filled with pride over what he had accomplished, Yahweh stepped into his life, and the mighty king was brought down to the level of a beast. Suffering from a disease known as lycanthropy, in which the sufferer imagines himself to be changed into an animal, and to a certain extent acts like that animal, Nebuchadnezzar was thrust out into the fields to live like the animal he thought himself to be. This continued until he acknowledged Yahweh to be the Most High God, who ruled over the kingdom of men. Pride is one of those sins that God dislikes the most. The wise King Solomon wrote, "These 6 things doth the Lord hate, yea, 7 are an abomination unto him, a proud look, a lying tongue, and hands that shed innocent blood." To describe something as an abomination is to say that it is disgusting and nauseating. What is noteworthy is that pride stands at the top of the list. This sin can appear in a variety of disguises. There can be pride of face, where one is filled with a sense of personal beauty. There can be pride of race, where one glories in one's pedigree. There can be pride of position, where one glories in the position he holds. One can also be filled with pride in what he has accomplished. The Apostle Paul was one of those who had wrestled with both pride of race, position, and accomplishments. Consider what he writes in the New Testament book of Philippians. For we who worship God in the Spirit are the only ones who are truly circumcised. We put no confidence in human effort. Instead, we boast about what Mashiach Yeshua has done for us. Yet I could have confidence in myself, if anyone could. If others have reason for confidence in their own efforts, I have even more. For I was circumcised when I was 8 days old, having been born into a pure-blooded Jewish family that is a branch of the tribe of Benjamin. So I am a real Jew, if there ever was one. What's more, I was a member of the Pharisees who demand the strictest obedience to the Jewish law, and zealous. Yes, in fact, I harshly persecuted the church, and I obeyed the Jewish law so carefully that I was never accused of any fault. I once thought all these things were so very important, but now I consider them worthless because of what Christ has done. What has Yeshua HaMashiach accomplished for us? He died in our place, bearing the guilt of our sin in his own body, even as the prophet Isaiah foretold. Through his death he purchased salvation for all who would put their trust in him. He is the one whose coming was foretold by Daniel. My dear radio listener, do not let pride stand in the way of you coming to faith in Mashiach. I earnestly beseech you to turn from your sin, even the sin of pride, and turn to Yeshua. He will forgive, and he will make you his child. May the fullness of Mashiach's peace be your portion. Shalom.